like to say I started with the lazy way of building wealth. And the lazy way of building wealth was using something that's not very sexy.
Welcome to the Freedom Nation Podcast with Jeff Kickle. On this show, Jeff shares his expertise in financial and retirement planning from a different perspective. Planning for your Freedom Day, which is the first day that you wake up and have enough income or assets and do not have to go to work that day. Learn how to calculate what you need, how to generate income sources, and listen to interviews from others who've done it themselves. Get ready to experience your own Freedom Day.
Freedom Nation, it's Jeff here once again with the Freedom Nation podcast. And today I get to have fun with someone who plays in the same sandbox as I do, sort of. I've got Wally Miller on, and Wally is someone who worked in the corporate or the public sector world for many years and had been blogging and focusing on trying to get to her financial independence. And she was able to. And then began a career now with a business that focuses on helping others to reach that. So Wally, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Jeff. Thank you so much for having me. I'm super excited about this conversation, and I'm really loving the podcast and helping people understand what freedom could look like.
Absolutely. I love it. I love it. Love it. Well, let's get started. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your story? How did you get to where you're at today?
Yeah. So I was one of those kids that when I was in middle school, I was thinking about high school. When I was in high school, I was thinking about college. When I was in college, just sort of the story goes on and on. And I knew I was very curious and maybe sometimes argumentative as a kid. And I was always labeled as the lawyer of the family. But that sort of that field always interested me, right? So when it came to law, it really interested me. I ended up going to college, majoring in political science for a little bit until I realized, well, if I don't go to law school, what am I going to do with a poli-sci degree? So I ended up going and getting a business degree, actually. So I got a business degree. And ended up getting a job in the public service world. And I wanted to take a break between 4 years of college and 3 years of law school. So I said, let me just take a break, take it easy. And I really ended up loving the work. So I started in public service in my early 20s and remained there for 19 years. I was there until the age of 39 when I walked away from a 19-year career because I had reached financial independence.
Nice. Super cool. So let's talk a little bit about your transition. So you told me you were blogging and stuff like that. Talk a little bit about that transition for you.
Yeah. I mean, I wish I could say that I was always great with money and I always had it figured out and I was always saving and investing. That is not my story. The more money I earned, the more money I spent, right? So we've probably heard that term lifestyle inflation, and that's exactly what happened for me. And I realized that if I wanted to, I always loved the work, but I began working at an office where it was a little bit of a toxic work environment. And I realized that I couldn't just walk away. I realized that I was a little bit stuck, that it wasn't like one of those things where I felt free. So sort of an ideal job became like a nightmare, not because of the work, but because of the people that I was working with. Management had changed. Really, my coworkers were great, but like management had changed. And so I felt really stuck. And I remember seeing sort of this clickbaity article a few months prior, maybe even a year prior. And it was about a couple who had retired in their 40s and who were traveling the world. So I dug up that article and I read it, and I remember reading it again and again and trying to figure out, but how did you do this? I don't understand. Like, there's no secrets. Like, what? How did you do this? Because for me, I realized that if I missed a paycheck or two, for sure, if I missed two paychecks, I was going to like lose everything that I had worked for. And it began sort of this awareness that even though I was making decent money, I had nothing to show for it. I had nothing to show for it. I didn't really know where my money was going. And that was when I realized that, okay, thankfully I had stayed out of credit card debt. So again, in my mind, I thought I was good with money because a lot of the financial gurus really focus on getting out of debt, staying out of debt, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, okay, done. I'm doing that. So I must be a financial guru, right? So that was sort of my idea and thinking that I was okay with my finances, but I realized I wasn't really saving. I wasn't really building wealth. And that was the aha moment that I was missing. I was missing a piece of finances that nobody talked too much about. Yeah, and it was through that where I wish I could say that after that, I changed all my spending habits. It was definitely a slow transition, but it did make me aware every time I went to Target for laundry detergent and toilet paper that I would leave with candles and pillows and all of these things that I hadn't gone in there for.
Right? But that's what they do
impulsivity.
Best.
Impulsivity. Yeah. That dollar bin, I mean, it's only a dollar, but that dollar.
Yeah, but it adds up when you get a whole bunch of stuff out of a dollar bin. So
that's exactly right. So that was sort of my introduction to, okay, there has to be a better way to do finances. And then I also realized that in addition to the savings component, I was also missing the wealth building component.
Okay.
And when I went into that world of like, how are people building wealth? Like, what does that even mean? Like, I'm not an artist or a singer or an actress or an athlete, so I will never be wealthy. That was how I defined wealthy. I didn't really understand. There was like a disconnect between what my situation was and how these people were building wealth with a 9-to-5. It just sort of didn't coincide. It really didn't make sense to me. And the more I read and learned and began hearing other people's story, I realized that I needed to have an investment vehicle. And whether that was real estate, entrepreneurship, the stock market, I needed to choose an investment vehicle that was going to help me accelerate my wealth and help turn my money into an employee, right? It didn't just need to sit in a bank. It really needed to be working for me. And that was how I slowly began to build wealth over time. And then I realized that no one I knew had ever talked about this, and no one in my circles knew anything about this. And that was sort of that was why I created the blog. I wanted people to just know that there was a different way. I wanted people to understand, like, did you know that besides saving $25 every paycheck, you could actually do 100? And if you do 100, you could do 200. And if you could do that, then you can start with $25 in investments and then start investing that way. And of course, I'm being a little bit simplistic now, but it really is simple, right? It's not always easy to get started, but it is relatively simple.
Yeah, it's as we say, it's not rocket surgery. I think I think the reality of it is we've come to the same approach from two different vehicles. But I think the thing that people don't realize, and this was something that I think back to, really the first financial book I ever read was Robert Kiyosaki's Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And I think back to the charts he drew of the difference between the rich and the poor, where the rich, they take income that comes in and they turn around and buy assets that generate more income. And then it's this perpetuating cycle there versus the poor, which they come in, they buy stuff, and that money goes out the door. And it's usually things that depreciate in value and don't generate an income stream. So I think that is the big difference. And I applaud you for really focusing on the wealth building side of it, because that's really the only thing that will perpetuate this down the road.
Mm-hmm. I mean, there is, I guess you could save your way to $1 million, right? Like you could save your way to $1 million, but I don't know about you, Jeff. I don't have 50 years to wait for my $20,000 a year to just sit there and grow, right? So it is one of those things where, yes, it's possible, but the reality is what we want to do is to be able to make sure that money is growing for us as quickly as possible, as safely. It's not about even doing crazy. Like when I talk about investments and specifically investments in the stock market, we're not talking about like day trading. I don't do day trading. Mm-hmm. I don't have 17 screens with red and green charts. Like it's a very passive way of investing, right? And it's the same thing even with real estate, right? There's an active mm-hmm. way to be a real estate investor. You can do a fix and flip home, right? And do all the hard mm-hmm. work when it comes to fixing up a home and then flipping it, right? That's sort of an active way of real estate investing versus if you have a long-term rental and have a property manager, now it's a little bit more passive, right? And mm-hmm. you talk about a lot is even your business, right? Mm-hmm. When you're creating a business, it's going to take a lot of active resources, right? It's going to take a lot of your time. It's going to take a lot of your sort of work in order to get mm-hmm. that started. But there are ways to turn sort of an active business into a more passive one. When we're thinking about different types of investing styles, I think it's really important for people to realize and understand what type of investing style they want to have, right? Which investment mm-hmm. vehicle intrigues you the most? And then do you consider yourself more of an active investor or more of a passive investor, right? But always realize that in the beginning, you're going to either need a lot of time or you're going to need some money. And sometimes if you don't have the money, then you're going to have to put in the time. But if you have a little bit less time and a little bit more money, then that might be the right avenue to take, or it might shift.
Yeah, it buys you more vehicles to play with.
Yeah.
But I mean, the argument that, well, I just don't have any money, so I can't do this. No, I mean, you're just going to have to work a little bit. I think of my first foray into real estate investing. I didn't have any money, so I got into wholesaling. Mm-hmm. And I never really wanted, I've never done a fix and flip. I will never do a fix and flip, have no interest mm-hmm. in it at all. But I still wholesale stuff even to this day when I acquire a property quickly. And it's a great way to turn a little bit of effort into a lot of cash really quick with very little effort when it comes to that. And then that can be turned into other things. When I guess that approach for me this last year has been, last year was the year of what can Jeff do to do the least amount of work and get the most amount of return for it at that mm-hmm. point. And everything that I've gotten involved in or things that I've done have all revolved around what's the least amount of effort I can put in now mm-hmm. to generate an above average return on my time and money spent on it.
Yeah. And I'm a real estate investor. I invest in the stock market and I also own my own business, right? So I'm an entrepreneur. Awesome. So I sort of have those three vehicles. They each have their pros and cons, their disadvantages mm-hmm. and advantages. I never thought of myself as an entrepreneur. It was never something in my purview. It wasn't something that I was interested in. As a kid, I didn't like sell lemonade, right? Like I just never thought that was going to be an avenue that I would pursue. I thought I was going to sort of, not corporate, but I worked in public interest. Mm. I worked for the government. So that was what I was going to do. And that was fine. But I think what came sort of what's now, my view is different on entrepreneurship. But I think if you're not exposed to people around your circle who have pursued entrepreneurship, who have and been successful at it, it can feel very scary. Like I know sometimes people are like, oh, well, my dad was a landscaper and like he would have to like try to figure out how he was going to pay his employees, or maybe there was like a negative connotation of what entrepreneurship looked like, right? There's instability, right? If you were a landscaper during COVID or a plumber during COVID, like there's all of these different things and all of these different stories that surround our interpretation of which avenues to pursue, right? There's a lot of people who lost money sort of gambling in the stock market, not investing, but gambling in the stock market, who lost money and now are totally freaked out and will never put any money in the stock market, right? Because they didn't have their sort of an investment philosophy for them. So there's all of these different things to consider. There's all of these different paths to consider, but education is important, and realize that before something becomes passive, there's some activeness, there's some activity that it requires, right? And again,
you have to do a little bit of work here first.
Right. And you're either, and sometimes that work comes from my introduction to investing. Started with I was using my 9-to-5 job to invest in the stock market, right? But I was working for that money. And then once that money was in the stock market, then I let the stock market do what it needed to do, right? When I bought my first rental property, I was using my 9-to-5 job in order to get the funds necessary to buy my first rental property. All of these things is going to take an effort of money or an effort of time in the beginning, right? Even if we think of an author, right? They spent hours and hours researching and writing before they ever get any money. And then afterwards, it becomes a little bit more passive, right? So it's sort of understanding what are you most interested in? What would you like to try? And do you have the either the resources of time or the resources of money in order to get started?
Absolutely. So let's talk a little bit about your transition into a financial coach. How did that occur? And what is it that you do when you work with people today?
Yeah. So in sort of my money journey, I realized some of the mistakes that I was making and some of the things that I was learning. I started writing online. So I became a blogger and I had an anonymous blog. It still exists out there somewhere. And I realized it started getting some interest in it and people would email me or drop messages at the bottom of the blog post and asked if I did consultations. And I'm like, what do you mean a consultation? Just read this book. I'm giving you the steps. Watch this YouTube video. Listen to this podcast. And because that was sort of how I learned about how to budget, how to create a spending plan, how to save money, how to invest passively in the stock market. So I didn't quite understand why people were having struggles. I'm like, just do this. Just read this. And I realized that it wasn't just the lack of information, right? I was providing the information and the resources, but it was people struggling with how to implement what they were reading for their own personal finances. And so one day I decided, let me see what would happen if I accepted one of these consultation calls. And I had a consultation call and I realized that they weren't asking about high level stuff. It was more like, I make good money. I don't know where my money is going. I paid off my credit card debt, became debt free, and now I have credit card debt again. I have six figures of student loan. I have no idea how I'm going to pay it off. And it was these very general, very basic things that I realized it wasn't that they were getting stuck with the math and subtraction. It wasn't the math they were getting stuck on. It was in the sort of the mindset and in the relationship with money piece, right? Sort of that financial psychology. And studies have shown that our relationship with money is shaped and formed between the ages of 7 and 10. And so when we think about who were we living with at the ages of 7 and 10 and how did they interact with money? What were some of the stories did we hear, right? Money doesn't grow on trees. We don't have money for that. Yes, you can buy whatever you want. Like all of these different stories. And I don't know about you, Jeff, but my parents never sat down with me and showed me how to write a check or open a savings account or explain to me taxes or anything like that. And for sure, I didn't learn this in school. So a lot of what we learn about finances is what we observe and then we absorb it. And we either do exactly what we've seen in the past or we do the complete opposite, right? So if parents were super frugal and they were super frugal, there's sort of like this scarcity mindset and we either become extreme spenders or extreme savers or sort of hoard money, right? And live off of like this like fear mentality that money is scarce. So all of these things shape who we are. And I realized that was also missing. And so one consultation call turned into another one. And because I had an anonymous blog, I knew that if I was going to grow this, I needed to create something where people could see me. Because when we're talking about finances, it's very important to trust and to make people feel comfortable in talking about something that can feel very taboo. And so that was where Financially Thriving Money Coaching started. And in 2021, I started doing this more regularly. And I was doing this on the side because I still had my 9-to-5 job, but I found so much fulfillment in doing the work. Having someone say, I just want to save my first $5,000 or even $1,000. And then just knowing that if they stick to the plan, $1,000 is a drop in the bucket for the amount of money that they can begin to accumulate in savings, right? From going from sort of financial survival to financial security to and then financially thrive. And that was how Financially Thriving Money Coaching started. And when I work with my clients now, of course, I'm a money nerd, I'm a numbers nerd. So we deal with the math, we deal with the income and the expenses, the addition and subtraction. We deal with all of that. And I tell my clients, I'm going to introduce you to some financial concepts that maybe you didn't understand or weren't sure were even available to you. But so much of the work also comes on the healing the relationship with money, right? Understanding why, if we know what we should be doing with our money, why is it so hard and difficult to actually do it? And that was how financial coaching began for me. And as you mentioned, it wasn't until my 30s that I began realizing that I was missing this wealth building component. So as I began to save, paid off debt, student loans, car notes, things like that, I was able to realize that, okay, I needed to focus a little bit more time and energy into learning how to build wealth. And I like to say I started with the lazy way of building wealth, and the lazy way of building wealth was using something that's not very sexy. I started with my 401k and my IRA, and that was how I started building wealth, and realized that if I had enough passive investments or a passive income coming from my investments, that I wouldn't need to work. And when my investment portfolio grew to such an extent that I could live off of my investments, that was when I became financially independent. But, you know, I was like, okay, well, sometimes people will use the term retiring early. So yes, I retired from my 19-year career, but the goal for me was never to not do anything. The goal for me was to have more freedom over my time. And because I was loving the transformation that my clients were having through their finances and like being able to see them through that, I was like, I think I've spent 19 years in the public sector. I think now I want to spend some time helping people and serving people in a different way. And that's what I've been dedicating my time to now, is building the business, helping more people through one-on-one financial coaching.
That's awesome. Well, and I mean, it's such a rewarding career for you too. I mean, it's, you're just taking what you had done. Now, let me ask you a question. Was this something, the concepts that you use, was this something that you've just assembled these and then created your own program, or did you buy into a program, or?
So a lot of what, I'm a self-taught investor, but I've spent hours and hours in courses and training, reading books, listening to podcasts, watching YouTube videos, right? So I've spent hours doing that. A lot of people are not going to nerd out in the same way that I did. But I also realized that everyone's journey is very different, right? Me and my husband, we're child-free. We don't have any kids. So the way we think about finances or even leaving behind generational wealth is very different than someone who has a child or four children, right? Sort of the goals that they have for themselves. So I think that there are some basic principles, financial principles that go along for everyone. For example, don't spend more than you earn, right? Set aside a percentage from your income, right? Some people start with 2%. Some people are already saving 10%. And even some of my clients are actually super savers. They have tens of thousands of dollars sitting in a savings account, but they're sitting in some of those like big banks that don't offer any or very low interest rate. And it's like, okay, before we even think about investing money, let's just think about whether or not this money could be in a safe container, like a high yield savings account, where, you know, especially now in 2024, the interest rates are as high as they were. We haven't seen interest rates this high since 2006, right? 2005, 2006, where you can just have your money in a savings account earning 4 or 5% or something like a CD. Understanding that every person's journey is going to be different, right? Some people's journey is just to get out of debt. Some people are like, look, I have $100,000 in student loan debt. I want to pay it off eventually, but I also want to be building wealth. Is there a way to do both? And I'm like, yes, let's do this, right?
Yeah.
That's the understanding how people learn and how people interact with money is something that I do in my first session with my clients, right? Is sort of understanding what have they tried? Have they tried notebooks, pen and paper, and a calculator, or fancy Excel spreadsheets or apps, right? And figuring out what has worked for them in the past and what have they tried that didn't work so well, and try to understand, okay, what can we implement and maybe try differently that can help them start reaching their goals? And we really start with the getting organized, right? It goes from some clients have 16 checking accounts and savings accounts and credit cards and all this stuff. And it's like, let's get organized first, right? Before we even think about what the plan is, it's about refocusing, gaining control, and then we want to set a plan.
Excellent. Well, so your typical engagement, is it an ongoing thing where you've got recurring revenue, or is it typically a short period of time that you're working with people? How does that all work?
Yeah. Initially, my program was a 3-month financial coaching program. But after the 3 months, I had people say, can we still work together? I still got goals. And so the demand, I realized that, okay, I think maybe having a longer program could help certain people. And so now people work with me on a 12-month basis, which is really fun because during Christmas time, they're not thinking about summer vacation. During summer vacation, they're not thinking about taxes. During taxes, they're not thinking about saving for the holidays. So I like being able to work with them during different seasons. And as different things come up, we can also work through that, right? Being able to understand all the employee benefits that might come through if they're working at a 9-to-5 in their open enrollment. And so it's, again, different clients will require different things, but even my clients who started working with me for 3 months, I worked with them for 1.5 years. And then now some of my clients who've worked with me for 12 months have worked with me beyond that, right? Because as you reach one goal, now you have another goal that you want to set. And I say that people will come to me in the beginning because they need that support and accountability. But afterwards, they want to just have someone keep them accountable, right? It's like we can all go to the gym and do the exercises, right? There's so many of free programs and videos, but there's nothing like working with a nutritionist, and there's nothing like working with a personal trainer. And so when you get that one-on-one support so that they can tell you exactly, right, exactly what you need to be doing, there's nothing like it. And we think of athletes, great. It's LeBron James, Steph Curry, right? Michael Jordan, like all of these people had coaches, even though they knew how to shoot the ball, right? They knew what to do. But it was when you're thinking about your finances, it's having somebody else's perspective. Make sure that you may not have a blind spot, right? Sometimes finances can be we can think of finances just as black and white, very logical. This is the number. But sometimes it's an emotional-based decision. And sometimes knowing how that is going to affect you financially, right? What are the numbers saying? But also, is that going to help you sleep better at night, right? And sometimes what's mathematically optimized or the most optimized solution isn't the one that's going to help you sleep better at night. And neither one of those decisions is wrong as long as you're aware.
Sure. Absolutely. Well, what's new in your world? What are you working on?
Yeah. So this year is so 2024, like I said, last year I walked away from public service, even though I was doing financial coaching, but this year will be my first year in quote unquote full-time entrepreneurship. I keep telling myself that I didn't go from working 40 to 50 hours a week to work 40 or 50 hours a week in my business. But I find this so fun. It's just, it's hard to not want to help people. It's hard not to want to make sure that everybody around knows that they don't have to do finances alone, that they don't have to suffer, that they don't have to sort of be resigned so they'll always be in debt, or they'll never be able to have a savings account, or they'll never be able to build wealth, or that the cycles of generational poverty is just going to be in their family's legacy forever, right? And I'm right now I'm like, okay, I work about 25 hours to 30 hours a week. But sometimes I find myself reading and learning and marketing and doing all these things, and I'm spending way more time in my business. But it's a different thing from choosing to do that versus having to do that because someone else is depending on you, right? Because that's the job requirements. And well, that's freedom.
You and I share one term that we both love, work optional. Instead of I work because I have to, I work because I want to and because I have the option. And there are some days that I wake up and I'm like, you know what? I don't want to work today, or I'm just not in the, I'm not in the mood. So I might have a couple things that I need to get done. And for the rest of the day, I might spend doing other things. It might be reading. It might be learning. I mean, I constantly am a ginormous sponge when it comes to information between reading and courses and everything else. I'm always wanting to learn more. My passion now is a lot of the AI stuff and really figuring out how to implement that into my life and my businesses. And even in the wealth management practice, we're using some AI from the management's perspective. I think, I still probably work as many hours as I always have, but I just do stuff that I like instead of things that I hate. And I just don't do things that I hate at that point.
Yeah. And I don't know about you, Jeff, but one of the things that I have seen with my solopreneurs and freelancers and entrepreneurs is that they want to be in entrepreneurship for the freedom, but then they give themselves a job. They work with clients or take on projects that they don't want to be working on or don't want to be working with. And I think that's why it's also important to make sure that you have a sound financial plan in place, right? So if you are thinking about switching from 9-to-5 employee to entrepreneurship, that you do have that safety net and that financial cushion. Because if not, what you are going to do is create another job for yourselves. Because you've probably seen this more than I have, but where people end up turning their businesses into a job. And there's always going to be things in marriage and parenthood and entrepreneurship that we don't love, right? But that's a very different thing than turning the whole business into something that doesn't reflect what the goal was, which is having more freedom over our time, freedom to be able to not to worry about asking someone for permission to take vacation or working on things we don't really care about or that we don't value. So I just wanted to, especially for your audience, I think it's so important that as one of the safety in quotes for those who may be listening, but there's a little bit of safety that comes from a 9-to-5 when you know you're going to get a paycheck every 2 weeks or every month. And the only reason why I say that in quotes is because we see the layoffs happening, but usually you can see some safety in having that paycheck every 2 weeks or that paycheck once a month. In entrepreneurship, you're going to have some $0 months, right? You're going to have some zero client months. And how do you navigate that is really by having a clear financial plan, right? So that when you have a $20,000 month, you're like, okay, I'm good for the next 1 or 2 months. I'm good for the next 3 months. I'm setting money aside for when things aren't so good or when it's low season, that I have sort of this safety net. And I see this over and over again, right? It can feel like this cycle of people walking away from their 9-to-5s and then just turning their businesses into jobs. And it's be careful in doing that. And I think the reason why people do that is because they don't have a financial plan. They don't have a clear financial roadmap to what their finances should look like.
I refer to that as creating the most beautiful prison you've ever lived in with the worst warden that's ever existed because they keep following you home every day. So I've lived both lives. I've lived the corporate life of the 9-to-5. And then I lived the, hey, I'm going to go off and start my own business and have all this freedom. And I was living with the worst warden ever at that point. Thank God for COVID, which slowed me down and made me realize that there was life outside of the four walls of my office. Well, let's transition to the fast five questions. Ready?
Okay, let's do it.
All right. So first one, you wake up in the morning, your business is totally gone. You still have the knowledge in your head, $500, laptop, computer, place to live, food and drink. What are you going to do next?
I built my business on Instagram. So I would create an Instagram account and start providing value and start marketing what my skills are.
Beautiful. Love it. Just go back to building what you built.
Exactly.
Next one. What's the biggest business mistake you've ever made?
I think the biggest business mistake was not getting support early on. I think business coaching or just finding other people who are on the same journey as you is so important. Doing entrepreneurship by yourself is possible. It is possible to not hire a financial coach or a business coach. It is possible to get there. But when you have that support, it just accelerates the journey so much faster. I think about like 2019, I was one of the few women and women of color and Latinas talking about financial independence and early retirement. Mm-hmm. And had I known how to like leverage that platform, I would be in a very different position now, I think.
Mm-hmm. Well, but I mean, I think you, the thing that probably worked to your advantage, sometimes it's good to have a coach along those points. And I think it's good to have a business coach always. But I think what endeared you to people, though, is just the raw, hey, this is me. This is who I am. I'm learning this along the way. And there's too many, I think, blogs and podcasts and YouTube shows and all out there that are so slickly produced that they're just not real. And the ones that I resonate with, and I think probably your audience resonated with, was the simple fact that you were just being real. You were sharing your life with the world. And sometimes that's what people need. And that's probably what, I mean, people just, I will tell you, after being in the wealth management business for 30 years, people don't just come to me and go, hey, can you coach me? I mean, it requires more work that way. From that perspective. So the fact that you had people doing that meant that you were adding wonderful value. Don't discount that.
Thank you.
You built it the right way. What's a book that you'd recommend for our audience?
Okay. So the book that sort of changed my life and really used simple words to explain investments and passive investing was a book written by J.L. Collins, and it's The Simple Path to Wealth. And he started off writing blog posts to his daughter, who wanted nothing to do with learning how to invest. He was in the financial industry sector. And he started writing these blogs, and they were written for her. But so many people found them useful, including me, that he put them in a more organized fashion into a book. And I read the blog before the blog was turned into a book, but then got the book. And it is the book that I've given out the most when it comes to people who want to learn how to invest. And again, simply, this is not 16 screens. This is not checking your phone every 2 hours. This is passive investments, index funds. Start with your retirement vehicles, such as like an IRA or a 401k or something like that.
Awesome. What's a tool that you use in your business that you might recommend?
Okay. So for me, the tool is an iPhone. Okay. I use my phone all of the time, but about 2 years ago, I implemented a tech tool called SweetDash, and it's a CRM, and it is quite robust. For the amount of clients that I was having at that time, I did not need such a robust system. But the more clients that I began bringing on while working a full-time job, it just made my life so much easier. And now, I don't know if I got past 100 clients, but I know that if I was working with 100 clients at one time, that SweetDash would really help me. And SweetDash is SweetDash. It's a really great CRM tool. Like I said, it's quite robust, but there's a little bit of a learning curve. But once you go through all of that, it really can make everything from invoicing, contracting, client portals, file sharing so easy.
Beautiful. I love it. All right. Last question. What is your definition of freedom?
My definition of freedom is being able to go to my niece's recitals and my nephew's soccer games and be able to spend 6 weeks visiting family and not worried about traveling and in a 1 week or 2 week PTO situation, being able to slow travel and say, let's get an Airbnb and stay here for 60 days, right? I think that is freedom. I think being able to have more control over your time is so important because you get to spend time with the people you love doing the things that you love most.
Beautiful. I love it. Well, Wally, thank you so much for being on. You are a joy to talk to, and you have just a wonderful mission. So I applaud you on your success. I applaud you on your Freedom Day last year, and really look forward to learning more about you down the road. So if someone is interested out there, they may be listening to this and saying, hey, I could really use her services. What's the easiest way for people to get a hold of you or find out more about you?
Yeah, people can go to my website, which is financiallythriving.com. You can send me a message or you can find my socials. I'm mainly on Instagram, which is financially_thriving. But if you just go to financiallythriving.com, you can find all that information there.
Outstanding. Well, thank you for being on, and we look forward to seeing you down the road. Folks, make sure that you take her up on it and go check her out if this resonated with you. And it, always, we do these shows twice a week, Tuesdays and Thursdays. So make sure that you hit that little subscribe button, hit the upvote if you're on the video channel, or give us a 5-star rating whenever you can. And always, I offer the ability for you to make a comment. Love to hear from you. Let me know you're out there. So thanks a lot. And we'll see you guys back here the very next time.
Thank you for listening to the Freedom Nation podcast. You can find us on Apple Podcasts and all the major channels. Wherever you're listening, please subscribe to the channel and leave a rating and review. If you have friends and family that could benefit from their own Freedom Day, please share with them. Finally, join Freedom Nation by following us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter.